2-2 pitch. Swing and a long drive. Deep left. Way back. Gone.
Welcome to another Baseball America Hot Sheet podcast. It's the Bear and the Parrot once again. I am the Bear. He is the Parrot. My human name is Josh. I'm in North Carolina. His human name is Jeff, and he is in the Northeast. How are you doing, human slash parrot?
I'm doing good out here in Massachusetts. I feel like you forget what state that I live in every time we record.
I'm trying to be mysterious and trying to not to keep, you know, the fans at bay.
No, that's okay. I like getting out there.
Four buses going past your house as much. You've got kids. You know,
that's fair. That's fair. Maybe I'm not thinking this through, you know.
I know. I mean,
enrage some prospects, etc.
I have a security company on the side, and I know that you are a desired target for looky-loos and crazed fans. They'll ask, Jeff, where's Jeff? Where's Jeff going to be? So I say the Northeast, but here you go out, and you just immediately out yourself. First few minutes of the podcast, everybody knows he's in Massachusetts. Jeff is in Massachusetts, and he's not in the ballpark. Well, but this week I don't think either of us has left our state. I guess did you leave Massachusetts for games this past week, Jeff?
Yeah, I did. I went up to New Hampshire for a couple of dates early in the week. Then was back here on Friday and Saturday. I think we had a complete washout anyway, but had, you know, family stuff going on. And then Sunday I headed out to the Central New England Prep Champion, high school championships. And I saw four teams there. I saw one of our top 20 draft ranked players and left-handed pitcher Thomas White of Phillips Academy in Andover, and another pitcher who might potentially be ranked in our top, at least, you know, 100 or 200, Maverick Rizzi, who's a big right-hander with Worcester Academy, who ended up winning the whole tournament there. Congratulations to Worcester Academy. So I got some amateur ball in, which is not something that I do frequently. I have done a lot less of this year as I have not done any college stuff, but that will change shortly as the Cape Cod League starts on June 10th. So I'll have plenty of baseball to go to on my off days from pro stuff, or when Hartford and New Hampshire and Worcester away like they are this week, I'll actually have something to go to.
And I stayed in North Carolina because you can stay in North Carolina and get 18 different million different teams.
Lucky you.
Yeah, if I so chose, I could go out to the ACC tournament this week and the DBAP. But this is a hot sheet podcast, and since I stayed in North Carolina, I did see a lot of, well, not a lot of, I saw two games of our number one on the hot sheet this week, Mr. Jackson Holliday of the Orioles. And, you know, when the week started, he opened with a five-inning game, well, it wasn't a scheduled five-inning game, it rained, where he fell a single shy of the cycle. And I knew JJ and myself were going out to see him the next day. And I thought, for goodness sakes, he's probably exhausted all of his hits. He's going to go 0-for-4 with a couple punchies the next day. And I'm going to be really annoyed because it's, you know, 3 hours round trip. Well, I was wrong. he went 5-for-6 that day with, at last check, it was 2 doubles and 2 triples. He missed a homer shy of the cycle. I say at last check because there seems to be some discrepancy in the scoring for that week. One of the doubles was a ball where I think if you had 3 or 4 scorekeepers, you would say one would say a single and he advanced on the throw, and the other scorekeepers would say it was a double because he was clearly trying to stretch it from the chute and looked like he was rounding first before the throw. I think in ballpark it scored as a double. I'm not sure if they changed it or not. The rules around changing scoring decisions this year are kind of weird. But in either case, it was a pretty good day. It was a five-hit day. I went back on Friday, and unfortunately he did not play. I was looking forward to seeing him against a pitcher named Jonathan Cannon, who has some velocity, which would have been fun to see. And then I went back on Sunday, and he two singles and two walks. So he was four for six or something with, or 2 for 6 with four times on base. In all, he had an excellent week. And I think one stat that I noted in Hot Sheet was he saw, by my count, 93 pitches this past week and swung and missed at 9 of them. In only one plate appearances did he swing at multiple, swing and miss at multiple pitches. That's pretty good. That's a sub 10% whiff rate for those of you who are, you know, math unsure like myself. You know, he was a really, really fun prospect. I wasn't, you know, just as far as the offense goes, it's hard to dislike anything. I wish I had gotten some BP, but both days that I got there, well, the first day we got there, I think probably like seconds after his last round concluded. And then same idea on Friday and Sunday, they didn't take it, obviously. So I didn't see, you know, any raw power in BP or anything like that. But it's, you know, looked like about as pure a hitter as you can find. Defensively, he didn't have to do a whole lot on the first day we saw him. I don't think he had a chance until like the 7th or 8th. And even then it wasn't some, you know, way to show off range or an arm or anything. It was like a scoop double play. We just had to shuffle it to second. And then the next time I saw him, he was playing second base and it was okay. I mean, he wasn't a world beater over there. You know, that's the biggest question, I guess, if you call it, I have left about him after seeing that. Jeff, what do you think about Jackson Holliday? I know we're having a little, we're going to have an article on the site at some point soon. I know our top 100 right now, Jackson Churio is listed at number one. We're doing a hypothetical roundtable, not a hypothetical roundtable, a roundtable, with our writers on hypothetically, if you could, I guess, just place someone at number one yourself, just overrule the entire process and put someone number one, who would it be? And there's some of us, I think if you listen to other podcasts on our site, I am blanking on the name of Carlos and Ben's podcast.
Future Projection, sir.
Future Projection. If you listen to Future Projection, you know those two are on board with Jackson Holliday. There are other good options. I haven't made my pick right now. I think I know where I'm going. But Jeff, what do you think of Jackson Holliday?
Yeah, and Dylan and I had a fairly nuanced conversation about this from a fantasy lens, of course, on the podcast that dropped earlier today on the feed. And we discussed three candidates, the current number one overall prospect, which is Jackson Churio, and then two very worthy other candidates in Jackson Holliday, as we mentioned, and then Ellie De La Cruz. And Dylan falls, at least on the fantasy side of things, on the Ellie De La Cruz camp. I think for fantasy, that makes a lot of sense because he's in AAA, has value to a variety of different leagues. That being said, I do think that he is a very viable candidate for one in a real life list because of that proximity, because I probably have the highest level of confidence in Ellie De La Cruz as a defender between Holliday and Jackson Churio. And that's not to knock either, though I do think there's a chance that Churio could end up in right field and Holliday could end up in second. You're shaking your head. No, I'm saying it's possible.
I'm saying
they have some pretty good center field candidates there with the Brewers.
I would say left field would be the answer for Jackson because the question about him is
he left. You think left over like Frelick, for example, or
because Jackson Churio's, I want to say the one hickey on his card is his arm.
It is his arm.
He's had arm trouble.
That the back, corner, though, depending
which is why he moved from shortstop to center field.
But I think in Milwaukee, in the home construct of that park, that right field isn't such a tremendous strain on your arm there. Maybe he could play left in other parks. It's not like it's Fenway Park and he's throwing from 380 against the wall. Could be a corner profile. I'll put it that way. Sorry, I spoke out of turn. Did not expect you to knock down my enthusiasm on one Jackson Churio, but here we are. It's the year 2023. But what I was saying about Ellie is I think that Ellie – though he has his warts or his hickeys, as you like to say, which might be the contact and the approach, it has improved in AAA. And he has the most explosive tools of any of them. He has the most power. He is the best runner. He does things in a baseball field that few players on earth, and I always throw this comp out there, and it's maybe a bit unfair, outside of like a Fernando Tatis Jr. can do, that he can impact the game in a variety of ways and could be the most exciting player in Major League Baseball within a year or two. That wouldn't shock me. Now there's
kind of like Shohei, but yeah.
Yeah, of course. But I think that's different, where he's, you know, a complete alien. And it's just not normal for someone to be a great pitcher and a great hitter. Ellie, just from an, you know, explosive positional standpoint, is as exciting as you're probably going to get. That said, Jackson Holliday has a great case because of just how superb his plate skills are. Tons of contact, and it's not the kind of profile where he just needs to make contact on anything. He's very selective about the pitches that he swings at. He makes excellent swing decisions. That might even be the carrying tool. That's how good it is. And then he's a plus runner. You know, there is power there. I think if you look at his body and his build, he projects to get stronger as he ages. He's only 19 years old, and could add good weight, I think, without slowing down too much. There's a lot of excitement around him as well. Plays shortstop. I don't think you'd be wrong if you had him as the number one prospect. And then you bring in Jackson Churio, who has the power. The underlying skills are better than people realize. His contact rate is up tremendously this year. He's actually run a really good contact rate in Double A. We should factor in the fact that he's the youngest player at that level in the Southern League, which is not an easy place to hit.
He's actually younger than Jackson Holliday.
And the last point I was going to make is we know that he is playing at a disadvantage because not only is he in these hitters' parks, not only is he incredibly young for the competition that he's facing them ride balls, baby. And that's obviously going to boost up his strikeout rate a little bit. And he's making more contact this year than he did last year with a similar chase rate. He's a bit aggressive on the outside part of the plate, but I don't think that's necessarily such a deterrent because of the type of player he is. As we talked about, there's other skills, supporting skills there as well. Do I think that Churio's a slam dunk number one any longer? No. On my personal list, I think I probably would have him three. And I'm kind of leaning Ellie, Jackson Holliday, and then Jackson Churio, knowing that Ellie will probably be up in the major leagues at some point this summer, could graduate, and then wind up going into the offseason with Jackson Holliday as the number one.
I think, you know, I'm leaning one way, but I really am annoyed is the word. I'm a little amazed that we're all forgetting about Yuri Perez here. Like, that guy's a special arm. And I have been the leader on the Yuri Perez train for a while. And I'll say this at 11:31 a.m. on Tuesday, knowing he is about to start at Coors Field this evening. Make me look very silly. But those first two starts were really impressive. He might be the only prospect-eligible player or pitcher, I would say, that has true ace potential. Not number one, ace. As in, the metaphor, if you extend the metaphor, there are four of those in a deck. You know, that's the kind of pitcher this young man could be. He's got the age. He's got the stuff. He's got the makeup. I can't believe he cut that beautiful hair of his. That's the only blemish, hickey, wart, liver spot on the card right now. he's got a fine mentor in Sandy Alcantara. He deserves to be mentioned with that group. Like, if you told me he had the best major league career of all those dudes we just mentioned, wouldn't be surprised. So I feel like the parameters we set for the article were not just position player, but we're all kind of forgetting Yuri Perez, and much like Dre, you should not forget about Yuri. He's really good. His other problem is he's not named Jackson, so that's just a problem in 2023 prospecting world. He's really interesting too. Ellie De La Cruz, man, the ceiling on that guy. I keep trying to put together what he could be, and all I think is like, okay, take someone with Giancarlo Stanton's power, put him at shortstop, make him a switch hitter, give him an 80 arm and 80 speed. What is that? That's, you know, if that's the ceiling, that's just an abominably good player. That's, and for fantasy purposes, I mean, defense is whatever, because it's just a matter of positional eligibility. I don't really care if you stink at it or not, unless you play in a league where you count errors. But you're going to have power, and you're going to have speed, and you're going to have some sort of hitability. I doubt he's going to hit like 330 or anything. If you told me that which guy's going to hit for the best average of the guys we talked about, it's Jackson Holliday, because his, you mentioned his plate discipline. You know, JJ and I got to watch it for 1-2 games. The way he takes pitches is silly. You know, I saw it earlier this year with Roman Anthony, who I know the line is not great, but it seems like he can. Some people say you can recognize spin really well. I feel like he sees the first revolution of the baseball and processes it immediately, like curveball, slider, in, out, up, down, whatever. Edouard Julien with the Twins, I'm sure I butchered that name, is probably the same way. You could see the synapses, almost see the synapses firing in his brain when he's trying to figure out which pitch to take. That's the same thing I saw with Jackson Holliday. That was really special. And then the bat to ball skills. The second day I saw him, he was facing a left-hander, and I thought, okay, this guy doesn't throw particularly hard, but I'm going to see how he hangs in against lefties. No issue. First at bat went the opposite way for a single. I think the third at bat, plate appearance, sorry, went the opposite way for another single or up the middle. Like, he didn't try to pull everything, which is really impressive.
Yeah.
And he took his walks. He showed pull up the middle and opposite in that game or in that series. There's a whole lot to like about Jackson Holliday. I think the Orioles may have nailed it again at number one overall.
Yeah, I think you're right. It's going to be unbelievable to see them potentially have three consecutive years of having the number one prospect in baseball and having it be three completely different players.
I'd be surprised if, like, Churio graduated. I think if he doesn't graduate, something's very wrong. Like I was thinking in my head the other day of like a quarter poll of like a quarter poll, like power ranking, who's the minor league player of the year. And like, if I did it, I'd get a lot of outcry that Ellie wouldn't be on there. Cause like, and the reason he wouldn't be on there is I don't expect him to be in the minor leagues long enough to be our minor league player of the year.
Sure.
Yeah. So it's like, I would expect that hate mail, hate tweets, like, you're forgetting about Ellie. I'm actually praising Ellie because I don't think he's gonna matter for this list, for that award.
Yeah, and I think that's an accurate take. You know, I definitely.
So, I'm gonna surprise you here.
Sure.
And this is your fault because you made me the host. While we're kicking around that idea, who would your leader be for minor league player of the year come end of the year? Would it be Jackson Holliday? That is.
You're saying at this point in the season?
Yeah. I don't think either of us expected that Holliday would have enough time.
I think it would be Jackson Holliday. I think his performance, what he's done, living up to expectations and surpassing them. He's hit across two levels now.
Mm-hmm.
I think.
I mean, granted, he's
been. His last line, there's not. I mean, he's very close to hitting 400 for the season. So, you know.
I think that would be an accurate take. Because, like I said, if he graduates from prospect status by the end of this year, I would be very surprised. But one other name I do want to throw out there, and I've been kind of pimping him a little bit on Twitter and in our Slack, is Jonathan Clase of the Mariners. Like, It's May 23rd, and I'll update the time again, 11:37 a.m. now. And he's got 11 home runs and 28 stolen bases already in 32 chances. That's kind of crazy. That's power speed right there. That's all you want. And he's already moved to double A he turns 21 today. So, you know, as a 21-year-old, he's already in double A. Fortunately for him, he's in the Texas League and not the Southern League. So he's not going to have to deal with the tack ball. I'm just looking here, fumfering for a second as I get to my tweet from last night. So I worked this up on FanGraphs. I've mentioned 11 home runs and 28 stolen bases. There are 25 players in the minor leagues who did that all of last year. Class A was one. But there's some pretty good names on that list. Pete Crow Armstrong did it. Corbin Carroll did it. Ellie De La Cruz did it. Jordan Lawler did it. Evan Carter did it. Luis Angel Acuna, Jason Dominguez, Carson Williams, Anthony Volpe. There's a lot of good names who put up those numbers, and those were over the course of a season. Class A has already reached those benchmarks this year. He's not on our top 100 or anything like that, but he's certainly a guy I think you need to keep an eye out for. And if those trends continue, I feel like he's probably going to get another home run or stolen base between now and the end of the season. You could be looking at a 2040, 2050 season, you know? And if he hits for some good slash line numbers, that might be a sleeper minor league player of the year candidate.
What do you think? Yeah, no, I can't argue on anything you said. I think you hit the nail on the head there, that he's definitely a viable option as well.
So right now we have discussed one player on the hot sheet and gone off several tangents, but what we will do now is take a commercial break. You ready, Jeff?
Let's do it.
Here we go.
If you know me, you know how much I hate making plans, but something I hate even more is having nothing to do. So enter Game Time. Game Time has made it so easy to look up events happening tonight in my area, and I can buy tickets the easy way. So maybe I'll head to a Nationals game, or I'll go see a concert or a comedy show, whatever. I get access to the best seats and the best deals at the last minute, all while keeping my plans stress-free, just how I like them. I mean, it's the fastest growing ticketing app in the country for a reason. Buy tickets in a matter of seconds, two taps and you're set. Tickets are sent directly to your phone so you never have to dig through all of those unread emails. Snag the tickets without the stress with Game Time. Download the Game Time app, create an account, and use code BASEBALLAMERICA for $20 off your first purchase. Terms apply. Again, create an account and redeem code BASEBALLAMERICA for $20 off. Download Game Time today. Last minute tickets, lowest price, guaranteed.
And we're back. So we've discussed one player on the hot sheet. Now we'll discuss two. And I'm going to give the floor to Jeff because he is the pitcher whisperer. I don't know what he whispers to them. But Gavin Williams had a pretty good week. Punched out 15, walked three, and I believe, if I had it correct, 20 strikeouts in 76 pitches. Or 20 strikeouts. 20 swings and misses in 76 pitches in his last outing. Which is pretty darn good.
That was true. You wrote that on the hot sheet.
Well, just because I wrote doesn't make it true. If it's on the internet, it's not always true. But
really?
Think of Gavin Williams, G off.
Yeah, so, you know, I think at this point, we know Williams. He's one of the top pitching prospects in the game. Seems to be the only one in the upper minors that hasn't already been called up to the major leagues this season. And part of that is the depth of the Guardian system. I think that in other organizations, if he's with the Red Sox, he might be their number two starter behind Chris Sale right now. not even a question for me. So, you know, that's probably the one thing you can say is he's probably going to be in the minors, I think, for a little bit longer, though. I've had times this season I've said that the guy's been called up within 24 hours. So here's me trying to put the good juju in motion here for Gavin Williams. But things that I love about Williams, it's a really deep pitch mix, primarily an excellent four-seam fastball that's been clocked as high as 99.4 this season, but sits 96 miles per hour. That's his average velocity. You know, with good hop and heavy bore, so that means that it gets a high amount of, you know, vertical break, induced vertical break, with over 10 inches of horizontal break. That's a heavy bore. It's a low release height, despite, you know, how tall he is. I think he's 6 foot six, 6 foot five, but he gets a flat vertical approach angle on the pitch. It's been really good. So thus far this season, he mixes that with a hard slider that sits, you know, 85 to 86, will touch 88, 89. Little bit tighter shape. You know, it's not sweepy. It's more of what we would call a gyro slider. So it sort of spins like a bullet, but he throws it hard and he lands it and plays it well off of the four seam fastball. Then he mixes in more of a traditional curveball. in the mid 70s. So it's almost like it's actually a 21 mile per hour separation off of his four seam fastball, but it's got a ton of depth. So there's like just about 40 inches of induced vertical break separation between the two. He's getting about 18 average in terms of ride in his four seam, and gets about 18 average negative induced vertical break on his curveball. So can kind of play the vertical game there. He'll mix in a sinker as well, and will every so often throw a changeup and a cutter. But he's got a bunch of different pitch shapes that he can mix in. He can play the vertical game. He can go, you know, east-west on you if he needs to. It's a really interesting pitch mix, and I'd say potentially one of my favorite pitchers in the minor league. So seeing him continue to shove and have this sort of success in AAA is really not a shock to me at all, and really shouldn't be to anybody who's paying attention.
Well, you just sold him short is what you did. You said his last ball topped out at 99.4. His last start, he touched 99.7, sir.
Oh, excuse me. Well, there you go. I wasn't looking at the fresh updated data. I'm wrong, sir.
If you're using TrackMan or Hawkeye, that one of those services will tell you he touched 100. The other will round down, I believe. In any case, yeah, he's the... As I said, I think in the hot sheet reps, I think I did it. If you're trying to pick a pitcher, you can't really go wrong with the Guardians or the Dodgers at this point. They are both fantastic pitching development.
Yeah.
Gavin Williams, Tanner Bibee, Parker Messick. I'm sure I'm missing some other guys who are really good. In the big league, Shane Bieber. They've had a really good track record of figuring out arms in the past few years. The Dodgers speak for themselves. We'll move down the hot sheet list here. Let's talk about Jefferson Cuero. It is he is a Brewers catcher who last year was amazingly one of the older players on the Carolina Mudcats roster at a ripe, I think he was 19 last year. He's 20 now years old, but he was on a team full of 18-year-olds. And this year he is in the Southern League. And we mentioned the tack ball. And he's hitting. I think he's hitting like 280. And this week he went what some might call bananas. He entered the year or the series with 3 home runs and left it with 8. Jeff, if he entered the series with 3 home runs and left it with 8, how many home runs did he hit?
I think that means that he hit 4 home runs, sir. 5. 5 home runs. 5 home runs.
How did I put that on a tee for you and you knocked it right into the pond? Five.
Yeah, I did. I had 5 in my head and then said 4 and went, whoa, why did I say that? Yeah, I'm a numbers guy.
I'm sorry. That's too hilarious. Anyway, 5 is the correct answer. He had it. 3 in one game and 2 in the other. So he has 8 home runs on the year. And we mentioned with the tack ball, you know, that's pretty impressive. He and Noelvi Marte, also on the hot sheet, had a fun time in Chattanooga. There was a lot of looking out if you were over the fence at that ballpark.
Yep.
But the offense is really nice too, but he's also a really gifted defensive catcher, especially when it comes to throwing. He's at 39% caught stealing for the year, and his arm is among the best in the minors, if not the best in the minors. And, you know, 39% is pretty darn good, especially when you consider we've made the rules changes this year to kind of allow base runners more liberty and to introduce stolen bases more to the game. So I think as you keep going, as time wears on, catching arm is going to be more valued than it is. I think right now we weigh heavily on framing and receiving and presentation and all that stuff. And I think once we get to especially in the big leagues with either robo umps or I think the most likely answer is the challenge system, it's not going to matter as much because you're not going to be able to steal strikes as much. And we're going to go back to, can you block? Can you receive? Can you throw? And Jefferson Cuero is a slam dunk catcher. And if you have a slam dunk catcher with any semblance of offense, which he seems to have, 2 years ago at this time, he was a very hot name as a guy who was going to, I think I made him one of my breakout guys or something like that. I guess I was a year early on him. And, you know, he's just a very talented prospect in a system that's full of very talented players, specifically very talented Venezuelan players, as we will talk about in a little bit here. Jeff, what do you think of your fellow Jeff? Are you Jefferson Ponce?
No, I'm Jeffrey with a G. Our names aren't even spelt the same. So there you go, Josh.
I'm Josh with a G. I'm G-E-A-S-H-G-O-S.
You know, I saw him in Fall League. That's the only looks that I've gotten on Cuero. He's an excellent defender. The fact that the offense is starting to bubble up and show is important. But, you know, I don't really know. You know, I haven't seen him yet this season. I struggle to value catchers. Generally, it seems that his receiving and throwing, et cetera, is excellent, which is going to mean that he's going to get full-time run as a catcher. If the offense starts to catch up with that and he's even an average bat at the major league level, that is a star and a guy that's going to produce, you know, pretty great war over the course of his career. So I don't want to go too strong in the takes here. I think he's really impressive, probably has a better chance to stick behind the plate than the other Cuero, but maybe isn't necessarily his equal offensively, but I don't even know about that anymore. The power is showing up. And that's a really good sign. And, you know, I would say to me, power might be the most important tool amongst a position player other than having a position. So, yeah.
You don't have a position. As long as you can hack it. Right. Power makes you some money, man. Those are some of the big guys on our hot sheet this week. But since we're talking about – actually, you know what? I want you, Jeff, to talk about Colt Keith. Because I believe it was either this week or last week, he had a 6-for-6 game with the cycle. He's seemed like a pretty darn good player in a system that needs pretty darn good players.
It needs pretty good darn position players as well, right? You know, that's definitely a big part of it. And I think the thing that's funny is we're at a time where people are overreacting and are very reactionary to smaller sample size on prospects. I think because the level of coverage is so high in comparison to what it was years ago, that it's starting to get into like what we saw in the major leagues for many years, where, you know, a guy can struggle for a month or for a few weeks and people really start to panic. And Keith struggled for the first few weeks of the season, turned around late in April. I think the line overall over 20 games in April was 286, 358, 464, got it in front of me. And then May, in those 16 games this month, he's really turned it on. 339, 405, 723. He's got 6 home runs. He's got 9 on the season now. And as you said, he's had some, as I like to call them when I'm writing the hot sheet, some high water games. And you know, that's really showed out so far. So he had a 6-for-6 game on Tuesday of last week, if I'm not mistaken. So that was actually this week. To start the week off, went 6-for-6, 3 runs, you know, had a double, the triple, the home, 2 home runs as part of a cycle. That's a fancy one, a double tater and cycle sandwich or combo meal. I don't know if that's what we want to call it. I guess the big question with him is like, where is he going to play long term? Is he a third baseman? Is he a second baseman? Does he end up somewhere like left field? Does he end up at first base? But going back to last season prior to him getting hurt, he has a combination of contact, approach, and power that is very rare. And when guys check all those boxes, they definitely fall into my personal cheese ball category. Colt Keith is definitely one of my cheese balls. And I think he'd probably eat some cheese balls with me. And I appreciate that in my prospects as well.
Well, as anybody who listens to these BA podcasts or knows me or knows my reputation, I hate cheese. It is vile and I don't like it. I don't like looking at it. I don't like being around it. I don't understand. It's a lure. It is nasty garbage.
No,
there is my hot take for the day. However, I do respect how quickly you've adjusted to be a nomenclature, slang.
I try.
Dialect. And use personal cheese ball and not, you know, favorite prospect or whatever. Kudos to you, Jeff. I think that's admirable. But we will move down the list here, and we will go to the helium guy, who is Luis Lara of the Brewers. We're going to go from one brewer in Jefferson Cuero to the next.
We're at the brewery. The tap house.
They're all very good at their craft. There's Ooh. No drought in their, I think it's a draft.
They're not domestic either. These are imports.
Damn. You are good. And you are drunk with power.
Nice. Everyone just turned off.
I wish they had Hudson Head, but they don't. Anyway, Luis Lara is a guy I've seen a few times before. I'm going to see him again tonight, and probably a few more times this week out at Zebulon. He is another really interesting Venezuelan center fielder for the Milwaukee Brewers. The other one you can find at the top of our top 100. And he also was on the Jackson Chourio plan this year, and then he did a little bit of extended, and then zip, moving on up to Zebulon, first week of May. See you later, ACL. I don't need your 150 million degree temperatures in the middle of the summer. And he has done quite well. I think he's hitting like 290 right now. Sweet. He's got a lot of twitch in center field. He made sweet double plays when I watched him. A little bit of power in there. Just a fun player to watch. I like to call him a little ball of twitch. Jeff, I don't know if you certainly haven't seen Luis Lara, but you felt strongly enough about him to put him in hot sheet or helium this week. What do you think about him?
Why yeah, you know, I saw the swing on the home run. I've seen some tape. I've watched some games. I have not had the opportunity to see him live. I really love the swing. I love the underlying skill set. Excellent contact, bat to ball skills, approach. He's walking, I think, more than twice as much as he's striking out as an 18-year-old in full season ball. And, you know, we've seen this before. We've seen the Brewers and their process separate the wheat from the chaff, or the barley from the chaff, depending upon how you're making these beer concoctions. But he's really interesting, man. Like, he got the Jackson Chourio treatment, and he's a very – it's almost like opposite skills from Chourio. But this is another guy that I think is a viable top 100 prospect, especially if you're looking at future projection. How do these guys look long term? I think when you look at these skills, you look at the organization, you look at their track record, he's somebody that I'm going all in on. And personally, I think he would be like at the back end, even if we had him like 99-100 of my top 100 list, my personal top 100 list, which is not, I do not speak for the site. You know,
I've nominated him in some of our Slack, let's call them discussions.
Fights.
Over top 100s. I took a video of two squirrels fighting outside my house yesterday, and I thought, oh, that's our top 100 process, but just in nature.
It's an Emmett Sheehan conversation amongst squirrels.
Yes. I think that's what they were talking about out there. But yeah, Luis Lara is really fun, and you know, that transitions us into what are you doing this week? And Jeff, I think I'll start with you because it's a quicker answer for you.
I'm doing nothing.
Well, you're not doing nothing. You're working on.
I'm gonna be home talking to scouts, working on my updates on my top 30 lists. I got 9 that I'm in charge of, or 8 or something like that.
How did you get that many? I have 6.
Yeah, and maybe it's not 8. I think it might be. I'm crazy. I like to do this stuff, and I'm working on some NCAA draft stuff with some data that we have, and going from there, and you know. Going to build up some things. I'm done with my podcast run for this week, as we've done the fantasy podcast, the hot sheet podcast, and then the 90th percentile came out. We had a great conversation about velocity. We'll have part 2 that we'll probably record on Friday with Mr. Matt Pajak and myself. So just going to be hanging around, man, watching some games on TV all day, which is fine. I don't have any games that are even remotely close. The closest one is Portland against New Hampshire. And I've seen Portland and New Hampshire. I've seen New Hampshire three times now. I've seen Portland twice. I do not need to drive 250 miles round trip to go see New Hampshire and Portland. So not going to be doing that. I'll be back at the park next week. So this will be my first week, I think, since the third week of February that I haven't been out at the yard, Josh. But I guess you can count Sunday.
I will be, like I mentioned, going to Zebulon tonight. Down East is in there, and it is better to see Down East in Zebulon than it is to drive to Kinston. That's, you know, maybe an hour 10 round trip instead of 3 hours round trip. And I will be seeing them against, you know, like I said, Luis Lara is going to be there. Anthony Gutierrez is going to be there. Glader Figueroa, Jason Morabel, Daniel Cueva. On the other side, you got Gregory Barrios. You got Daniel Giarte. One of my cheese ball pitchers for this year is going tonight, Will Rudy. He came up a little later in the year. He's a converted shortstop out of, I want to say, Cal Poly. I can just look this up because we have the magic of the internet here. And he's been very interesting this first couple starts. He's 2-0 with a 1.26 ERA. And it's kind of a nice little mix of east-west game, sinker, slider. Gets a lot of ground balls. Let's see. Yeah, 1.5 ground out to air out. He caught my eye his last time out. He's really interesting on that staff. I'm a fan of Patricio Aquino on that staff. And then there's the big boy, Jacob Mizorowski, who's really fun. The answer is he was at Cal Poly Pomona. So I'm excited to see him tonight versus the very, very young Down East lineup. And then I want to say Friday, if their rotation stays on turn, I'm going to see Jackson Ferris for Myrtle Beach, who is some helium in the Cubs system. And let's see, there's what? And at least probably 2 days, I'm going to see Greensboro, which has Bowling Green in town, which means I get to see Junior Camp Manero. And I will see him tomorrow versus Anthony Solometto, which should be a nice challenge, a funky left-hander with some stuff. And if I go tomorrow, the day after, I will see him against Bubba Chandler, right-hander with some stuff. So two nice challenges at a very hitter-friendly park for Junior Caminero, who's been one of the bigger helium-filled balloons this year in the minor leagues. Another example, if you are trading with the Rays and you are going to trade them a young position player, just don't do it. You know, it's a bad move. They're pretty good at identifying these guys. So that's my week. And then also, like I mentioned, I've got six top 30s, making some calls on those. I did some of those last week. Gonna reach out and make some more calls, see who's moving up. There's been some helium guys in a lot of my systems. You know, if you're a Yankees fan, look out for Chase Hampton. He's been really good this year. He's one of their best arms. If you're a Giants fan, Wade Mechler, the Oregon State great, who amazing story. Freshman year of his high school of high school for him. That young man was 4'11 and 70 pounds. Freshman year of high school. That's throw me a telethon level numbers. And now he is a professional ball player who is hitting, I believe, 430 right now and has moved from high A to double A. And Jeff, you're the numbers guy. Is a 430 average good?
I think it is, coach.
Okay. All right. Assistant coach. That's pretty good. I'm really excited to see, you know, he's a double A. I'm a little upset that I missed him in my trip to Eugene. I think I saw Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. He got activated Friday. It happens. But they're at Richmond, so I can, you know, if I really am so inclined, I can go up to the Diamond and Funville, USA, and see them there. You know, maybe later in the year, I'll match him up with a guy we mentioned earlier in the podcast, Jackson Holliday, who might be in Bowie at some point in the near future. So that would be a fun reason to go up there. They've got some arms up there too. But yeah, that's kind of my week. And we've talked about Jeff's week. So I think we're just about done here on this. I think this is our longest hot sheet podcast yet.
43 minutes, maybe. We took it deep on this one. Some deep conversations.
It's a deep conversation that I think, and I think we talked about the fewest players on the hot sheet yet, but we trailed off into, you know, number one prospect in baseball territory, helium guys, all sorts of fun stuff. So for Jeff in Massachusetts, all you celebrity hounds, and I am Josh in North Carolina. I'm Josh in North Carolina. We're going to keep that in. Thanks for listening. Bye.
Jackson Holiday, number one, number one.